Hello,
welcome.
Hello.
So here we are, worldwide live over the internet through BBS Radio. Welcome all those who are joining in through BBS. And we have the phone lines open since we do this at the same time with a conference call. And if you have a chance, when you're on the line, please say your name and location.
Julianne in San Diego.
Hello, Julia. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Hey, Julia. Julia?
Yes? Julianne.
Yes, Julianne. Hey, if Wynn and Terry were in San Diego live, would you go to see them?
Would I go see you?
No, them.
No, both of them, yes, I would. Absolutely would go.
Well, watch your emails, because
so obviously you're coming here then.
Well, you know what, we were going to LA to hang out at the Conscious Life Expo, which is this coming weekend,
mm-hmm.
And right. Then I said, since we're going to LA, there's this little meeting room in Pasadena. That I called him up at the bookstore there, and he had an availability for Friday and Saturday. So I committed that we'll do a live thing on Friday, you know, like a free introductory talk, and Saturday we will do an all-day workshop until you get sick of us. And then, but people don't usually get sick of us. I'm surprised, actually. I'm surprised that we do three calls a week. Somehow, it's interesting. But then I checked the schedule. There's a guy named Dean Price. I did my first talk when my book came out at his expo. And he's doing one in San Diego Sunday, okay? And there's a meeting room open. And I can do a talk and a workshop there. So I'll probably do it, you know, because it's easy. And I think it's called the Mission Valley Inn in Hotel Circle. All right?
Oh, yeah,
on Sunday. And just watch your emails if you're in L.A. or San Diego.
Okay. And
if I got enough...
I grew up in Pasadena, so I know Pasadena very well. I still have property there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, come to Pasadena, too. It's okay.
Well, send me that information.
I'll send both of them out. And,
okay.
I mean, if enough people are interested in Ventura, Santa Barbara area, we might fit something in there. Is Terry on the line yet?
Yes.
What are you doing here early?
Oh, well,
she missed
my energy center.
Good for you, Terry.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's get... wait a second. Terry, talk for a second. I'll be right back.
All right, Terry, the honor is to you to say what you want to say.
No cursing.
Well, welcome, everybody.
We're happy to have you early, Terry, anytime.
Okay.
We love you, Terry.
Yes, we love
who's
you.
That? Who's that?
That's Fred in Eagle River.
Hello.
Fred. Is that
yep.
Fred Brooks?
Yes.
Fred who? All right.
Brooks.
Hello.
You see, I want you guys to know you're really not anonymous, okay? If we don't know you, I think you heard the story. I've told the story about how, you know, they don't do this all the time. If they
not
did...
Not yet, okay, Wynn?
What's that?
We're not recording yet.
All right, I'll start recording. I always get more self-conscious once I'm recording, but I'll try. Here we go.
This conference is being recorded.
Okay, this is February 3rd, 2014. and Wynn and Terry in Arizona, and all of you. And I was just making a comment just before. You know, if you guys that are coming in now have not come in early, it's worth it. But it's different, okay? It's like you find out the makeup of all of us, because this is not, how can I say it? We have a lot of individuals that come on the call, and it's made up of individuals. When somebody just comes in when the call first starts, there's this perception that can happen that, oh, Wynn's got a bunch of followers. And I hate that idea, because I'm a follower as much as you guys are, because I just jumped in and I'm here, and I don't, you know, I'm not looking for people to pay attention to me. I'm not pandering to create attention. I certainly appreciate it, because we are developing as a group, and we're learning how to work with what I call group energy. And group energy, see, it's very tricky, because those of you that are aware of the negative agendas certainly have heard of NWO and all that stuff, one world government. And someone could think that if they're not paying very close attention to this, that because we talk about the law of one, that somehow that means we relate to one world government. And as I've come to understand it, out of closely doing huge amounts of research to figure out what's up from down, because just because we talk to these guys in other dimensions does not mean we don't have to do research. We have to research them. We have to consider everything. We have to consider what happens if a negative source comes through, Terry. What if suddenly there's a lot of responsibility? And most people don't do live channelings like this to the public. And the reason is, and it's a good reason, is that we can't take anything back once it goes out. And if you do something in private, then you can say, I don't like the feel of that, or Terry sounds a little spacey, or we were not on today. Let's just throw this one away and do the next one. So doing it publicly like this makes a certain transparency that it's pretty obvious that we couldn't make it up. And that, I mean, somebody did say, maybe Wynn gives Terry all the questions beforehand and she studies the answers. Well, that does not happen. We don't have time to do it. We're not charging for this. So how much time do we have? It's enough to take the time to come on the calls. We've been doing it for a long time, and three times a week. And the only reason I'm doing it, and I think I can speak for Terry, is because we have seen how much people are benefiting from the connection, and that this is a reality system which is out there. And it's the first time people are exposed to it. Not everybody, but many people, they get really catalyzed. Like the thought comes in, like when you talk about a separation of souls, some graduate and some don't graduate. You know, if that's all we were focusing on, then how could it not, you know, suppose I just told you, I said, okay, there's a separation of souls. Some are graduating, some are not graduating. And in order to graduate, you have to have your heart open. I'll see you later. And then you don't hear from me again. What does that do? And for many people, it would strike fear into their hearts, because they're going to say, geez, what if I don't graduate? And so at some point I said, if I was going to say that, I had to create everything possible to make sure those of you that actually believed that didn't have to be afraid, and an environment where loving energy could be present that you could participate in, and that that becomes a reference point for an open heart. Oftentimes, people are needy. You know what? It's part of the human condition to be needy. And it's nice to be able to find other people that you can co-create with, collaborate with, and fulfill the needs. If the need is to have money, to be able to do that and make money. If the need is to have intimacy, that you have someone to create intimacy. And those are all good things, except many people, particularly people who are wanderers, have a lot of challenges getting their needs met on the human side, because they still have needs. And, you know, one of the reasons that it can be hard for a wanderer, now this is not true for everybody, and if you're listening, you may have, you know, on a personal level, your needs working. You're making enough money, you have a good relationship, you have a family, and you're really happy. And I appreciate you being on the call. But there's a lot of people that are very advanced. And the problem is they're more advanced in their consciousness than the people that they find in their lives. And when they go to find a way to get their needs met, they have to contract into a consciousness that's smaller than theirs. Now, this is not an ego trip. This is not being superior to someone. Not about that at all. And if you take it that way, you're taking it in the wrong way. It's just the way it works. But you don't know why. You don't know why you're different. You don't know why you don't fit in. You don't know why you've been a rebel. You don't know why you hate authority. And so, and hey, I did all that this lifetime. Believe me, the fact that I'm doing this now is only because I've done all of that. And if I wasn't doing, I mean, the time that I really felt fulfilled is when I was hitchhiking around the country playing music. And it was a very humble existence. And I was just glowing because people were giving me all this love and I was loving them back. And then I would go to the next city and do the same thing. And I was a nobody. I mean, I couldn't know, you know, and it was everyday miracles and synchronicities. And I didn't understand how it was happening and why it was happening to me. And I did it for 3 or 4 years. And whenever I would stop, I would fall into the reality systems. I'd have relationships, and I couldn't make them work. And, you know, people would acknowledge the fact that I was a good artist, a good songwriter, and I was able to generate love on a stage, but I didn't know how to convert that into a human experience, because every time I did it, I would contract. I would feel like I didn't belong or they didn't understand me. And it took me a long, long time to get through that. And I went through a lot of stuff. So I understand how that feels. And if you're going through that, I do understand it. And that you can be so out of it and contracted. And then you can start closing down. And your heart closes down. And so on this call, what I see happening is this amazing experience where there is loving energy on the call that's not dependent on another human to give it back to you. That doesn't mean you shouldn't have that. You should. But when you include the connection of the love of the higher realms in the relationship with another human, and how does that look? The way it looks is that you can see that other human as not just a fulfillment of your needs, okay? But you can see them. You can see the divine in them. You can see the God in them. And if when you can see that, then you can have a really, really successful relationship with another human. But if you can't see that, maybe you've connected with divine in yourself, in groups, whatever. But the key is just to take that perception and make it so that you can live it. And usually you have to go through a certain amount of stuff before that happens. So part of the goal of doing what we're doing is to hold a stable anchor of loving energy that you can relate to. It's strong enough that if you need it, not everyone needs it, but if you need it, it's here for you. And it's to help you to learn how to hold that energy in your life. And I thank you all for being here. And not everyone fits that profile. And there's all kinds of people. There's people on this line that have dealt with a lot of these issues, and they are helping to hold the energy for the other people. And they don't even, maybe they don't know they're doing it, but I know they're doing it, because the more people that hold the energy, the easier it is for us. And I'm just a focal point, and you all who are doing it are helping to hold the energy. And those of you that are feeling needy can take this energy in and learn how to become more balanced, to learn how to bring the things into your life that you need without getting caught in the karma of it. That's one of the pitfalls of needs, because when you have needs and you go out to fulfill your needs, on the lower levels, it becomes an exchange. I'll do this for you, and you do this for me. I'll work every day. This is from a guy's point of view. I'll work every day, bring home the money, and you know, you'll give me the intimacy, the sex that I need to stay balanced, so I go out the next day and work again. And that's not wrong. And as long as everybody is in balance with it, it works. Except as soon as one person falters, like, honey, I have a headache tonight, and then the other guy gets angry, and then he can't get out of his anger, and he approaches his wife or his girlfriend with the anger, and she doesn't want to do anything to do with him. How come you're not loving? Well, I'm not loving because I didn't get my needs fulfilled. And then it becomes a stalemate. That's what happens in relationships of obligation, that everyone is weighing, did I get enough? Is it balanced? Is it fair? And relationships that are divine, or, and I don't even want to use spiritual words, relationships that are of the highest level, people fulfill each other because they care about the other person. And they want to make the other person feel good. Needs are not bad. Needs are part of the human condition. And when people can fulfill each other's needs, and they do it out of the law of one, in other words, you're me. You're an aspect of me. I'm an aspect of you. But your needs are different than mine. So when I help meet your needs, and you become happier, I become happier. And that is the law of one in action. Mutually collaborating, co-creating, when giving each other what we need. And it's easy when you start doing it. But it's not so easy when, you know, one of the things people are taught is to feel shame for their needs. You're not supposed to feel that. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to do this. You know, spiritual people are supposed to be this way. If you're feeling that way, you must not be spiritual. I need to go find someone who's spiritual. And it's an endless drama that never ends. And so I'm going to end that. I'm going to go right into our topic tonight, how the Elohim created the universe, to give you the three-minute explanation, because some of you are probably listening for the first time. And this is information that makes a lot of sense, but I certainly can't validate it. So you have to take it and integrate it and see how it fits in with everything else you know. But originally there was one awareness, something became aware, and it separated because it was lonely. Now there were multiple awarenesses, but the awarenesses were just energies. There was no physical universe. Time was not in existence. There was just being beginnings of time. To be aware, there has to be time, because awareness means there's a before and an after. And if there's no before and after, then there's no memory. There's nothing except being in the moment. And as soon as you're aware of yourself, then you're aware of a continuity. And if there's a continuity, it's the beginning of time. But time is moving at different speeds. Depending on your awareness is how fast time is moving. Well, the first awareness divided itself into a few soon to become millions and multi-millions of energies, which, if we have it right, that's who the Elohim are. And so now we have these millions of energies that are subdivisions of the one infinite creator, and probably subdivisions of each other. They probably could divide themselves because they were mirrors of the first cause. And they are interfacing with each other, but there's no persistence. Everything is in the moment. So there was the idea of how to create persistence, and that became learning how to create frequencies. They call it spinningness frequencies that would coalesce, combine, and where the frequencies would combine would become a point in space-time, i.e., a point in the universe. And they were using geometry, mathematics, sacred geometry, and they were combining frequencies, creating galaxies, planets. And as they were doing this, and there was consciousness in everything that was created, they gave free will to every consciousness that was created to create the laws of the domains within its own domain. Everything had a consciousness, and everything had a decision-making ability to create the laws by which things would happen. So, for example, we're on the Earth. The Earth creates certain laws. We live within the the laws of the earth, and we have children. We're a sub-logi of the earth. We create certain models to bring our children up, and they grow up, and then they take what they learn from us, they carry it forth, and they have children, and etc. So it became a self-evolving conglomerate, and there was really no intent to control it. And when it first started, it was like an aquarium. And the Elohim didn't think of themselves as God. They were creating, and this was their creation. And we've talked, you know, there's a whole series of these talks. And if this is interesting, I recommend you go to spiritchannel.net, do a search on how the Elohim created the universe, and you'll find about 6 or 7 or 8 of these conversations we've had with the Elohim on this. And it's very fascinating because Terry couldn't possibly make up these answers. And they actually make sense in an intuitive sense. But what happened was, the last time we did this, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, we had talked about how the creation of DNA, how the amoeba was the first animal being that had DNA, that DNA was a microcosm of the universe, that DNA could evolve, and how it evolves, that's another story. And at a point, there were animals or beings in this realm. I don't know if there were animals or beings. We didn't get it down to all the fine points. And that the Elohim could project and be with a being in this realm. Perhaps just as if they project with Terry and they project with those of you who feel an energy coming in when we do these calls. And when they project, they can be with us and then they can go back to where they were. And apparently, early on, some of the Elohim projected into this realm and they would occupy beings. And I don't know if they were animals or humanoids at that point, but they would experience sex. And that this was an Edgar Cayce as well, this very point, that sex drew them into the energy of the other being. And they got to the point where they couldn't leave. They got trapped here. And they got caught in cycles of reincarnation. And we are going to continue from that point tonight. And listen carefully, because this gets very deep oftentimes. And you have to track what they say. And again, these calls are posted on the Spirit Channel, spiritchannel.net, usually within 24 hours after we do them. So if you miss a call, you can listen. And if you want to hear something again, you can listen. It will download it to your computer automatically. And usually it shows up in the download section, okay? So you get it permanently on your computer. You can listen to it anytime you want. You can move it to a your smartphone, put it on an MP3 file, and listen to it while you're driving to work. Many people have discovered that listening to these calls repetitively has been a great, great contribution to their working out their patterns. And so you're all invited to do that. And it's all freely available. We have hundreds of calls on the Spirit Channel. And if you've been intrigued by what we're doing, if you think there's something to it, download those calls on your MP3 player or on your smartphone and just listen to them instead of the radio when you're driving somewhere. And just check it out. See if it works for you. See if it helps, you know, help shift and open your energies. Many people have said it has worked that way. So, Terry, I know you're not ready, right?
No, not really. I have to step aside.
Are you unmuted? You're unmuted anyway. That's good.
Yeah,
right?
I am. I just unmuted myself.
I just unmuted everybody else. Let me put it on lecture. That's what I meant to do. Okay. So, Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect each person here. And any negativity be taken to the highest realms of light and transmuted for the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in the flow of energy radiating from the center of the universe through the galaxies, through the Milky Way, through the solar system, through the outer energy fields of planet Earth, through our bodies, and into the center of the Earth. And right now, we invoke a group energy connection while maintaining the sovereign integrity of our souls. And we invite those sources that are positive, service to others, honoring the law of one, to join with us. And we create a protected space that only the positive has access to. And anything not of that nature must leave now. And I turn it over to our sources as they communicate through Terry Brown. And if they were to make any corrections on anything I said in this introduction, please take the floor and do so. Thank you.
We greet you in the love light of one infinite creator. This is the 3rd of February, 2014. And we, in a fresh moment of time, connect with the earth realm and the earth plane. And we see that it is more packed with geometric forms and focusing entities than in general in the higher realms. And we greet each and every one of you. We come directly to you. We don't come over the telephone line, and we don't come over the computer. It is only the voice that comes through there. We are coming into your space for those that wish connection. We are coming directly into your space. As we intersect with the manifest realm, the energies of the manifest realm, we show a color pink, which is a very light color of pink, and it is the intersection of manifest realities that creates the pink based upon our frequencies as we intersect. Do you have questions?
Yes. Going on this line of topic, we know that there's a lot of you up there. If you are going to do a census, how many Elohim are there? And I know they fan out through lots of dimensions. They're in councils. But how many individual Elohim entities are up there?
Who are speaking, the part of the Elohim that is speaking to you, we have not made a count. There are millions of us, and there are millions of us that are compartmentalized into different areas with different functions, monitoring attitudes of race, monitoring areas within the third density that may need help, monitoring areas within the angelic realm that may need help. We are like a monitoring group that can step in and can help to get things going again when things are not operating correctly. So there are many departments and millions of entities within those departments that are working together on their own particular assigned tasks.
As the physical realm was created and evolved, we know the Elohim were, I would imagine, carefully monitoring it as it evolved. And according to our last talk, the Elohim initially could come and go, and they could occupy beings, and then some of them got stuck because they chose to experience sex through a being they occupied. Of the ones that got stuck, did some of those original stuck beings still stay? Are they still in this realm, still stuck? Or did they manage to graduate? And what percentage of them managed to graduate, if you can see that?
It is a very small percentage that managed to graduate. And one of the difficulties in graduation is that when one is in an energy and is moving within an energy, it is very hard for them to escape that box that they are in. And they keep working within the box to attain their various goals. Goals of survival, the goals of achieving plenty, the goals of fulfillment. It is very hard for them to, within the box, with the materials of the box, to imagine escaping the box and going back into the higher realm.
In the course of humanity's history, there are people that had roles of teachers, as starting religions. Were some of those people connecting with the Elohim as part of their manifestation? Say, for example, like Krishna.
We see that Krishna was connecting with other beings. However, they were not of the higher Elohim where we are. Although he did have like the tuning of an instrument, he could tune his body to achieve the higher vibrations, and he, however, had particular vibrations that he tuned into. Past masters, past entities which have learned much. He particularly tuned into those, rather than into the higher realm of the Elohim. However, his body he is a tuned instrument able to sense frequencies in a very large range, was able to go into the range of frequencies where we are.
How about, I don't want to take everyone's inventory. Is there anyone that you can point to in history, the recorded history, I guess we'd have to say, that had a very high affinity with the Elohim?
There was the science fiction writer, Dick, who did connect and was quite delighted with the Elohim frequencies. There were entities within the Anunnaki who carried the frequencies and were able to tune in to the higher frequencies and have become, in a sense, hybrided with the Earth people and continue in their lifetimes within the Earth realm, but have the capability of connecting with the Elohim. There were the masters of India who connected deeply with the Elohim and was able to bring through in writings the knowledge from the Elohim and to bring it into ancient writings. The Dalai Lamas were able to tune in for quite a long time, lifetime after lifetime, to bring through knowledge. The Upanishads are some of the literature that has been brought through that is to some degree mixed but has some of the elements from the Elohim.
That was the Upanishads, right?
Yes.
Upanishads?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And if we go back to the amoeba, where we understand that that would have happened prior to the time that there were any Elohim in this realm, could you tell us a little more about the story of from the amoeba to animals to humanoids? How did the Elohim get more interfaced? And when the higher Elohim would be observing Elohim going into this realm and not coming back, why did they continue to come?
Some of them wanted to find out what happened to their cousins and brothers. Some of them wanted to experience things that when individuals would come back and they would relay what happened. Other individuals who heard this wanted to go and to experience what it was like to be various animals or to be various people or have various lifetimes, what it was like, an exciting adventure would be one of the ways that it was looked at. As far as the beginning, there were imaginations of what things could be like building sandcastles in the air and making within one's own mind a manifestation, a coming together of a thin life form that one could have as a companion, and one could play with, one could modify, and then learning how to impose that vision upon other visions of the potential of life. And with great strength of creation, of how to manifest energy that could begin to crystallize and could begin to then take shape and could then begin to be a faint image of a human or an animal, to crystallize the vision so that another could see the vision. It became a game of what could one envision. And then, with different people working on the same vision, how they could get the vision to perpetuate. And then, as each one withdrew their energies in their creative, visionary crystallization of manifest force, each one withdrew that, and then the image would fade, and there were group imaging sessions. And they were quite delighted by this as a game, as a creativity that gave them something to have as a companion in memory, someone to play with, so to speak. Then there were great years of participation and experimentation with how to manifest matter and to form it into something that could be living and breathing. And then there was the excitement of having created an independent body that was able to move on its own. And other people became entities, energy entities became involved in this delightful project. Some individuals have indicated they felt it was criminal to do such creations. But there was an excitement about making an entity, a manifest entity, that could move on its own and could be made more and more complicated. And there was great years of experimentation on what would happen with this type, certain type of entity, or a four-legged entity, or a two-legged entity. And there was great sadness if one of these self-moving entities were to stop, as everyone came to love the entities that were being manifest. Does this help?
Yes, it does. And when the entities were being manifest and the Elohim were, how shall we say, interfacing with those entities, were they doing it with the four-legged creatures or two-legged creatures? I mean, did they get stuck in animals like horses or bears or, you know, whatever, dinosaurs? I mean, it's like, how selective were they in which entities they would visit with?
They would select it based upon the desires of the particular group working on a project, would create four-legged creatures, and the desire to create the four-legged creatures would be to see if these would be able to survive more easily in an environment. And then the idea was thought of to have a two-legged creature, that could learn more easily, could be smarter, could think, could have a number of the characteristics of the Elohim, and wouldn't simply stupidly run into walls, but would be able to be set free into an environment and be able to psych out the environment, be able to think the way through to get food, to do the functions of the body as the body became more complex and had more function. Then there were the life force within the body and the combined life forces within the body of the cell of the organs working together to sustain the being of the thought process needed to grow food, to bring food. It built upon itself after years and years, millions, billions of years, it built on itself. There were certain beings that were more successful than others, but some beings had very great ability that other beings did not have. Experimentation still goes on today outside mainly of the realm of humans. However, there are other alien races who are still experimenting. Some of the races over time did not continue the we search for the words, the brilliant connection with the surroundings, the brilliant ability to survive, the body manifestation of being able to take the food and to utilize it for high energy and good thought and to create a long living creature. Some begin to run down, and over millions of years, and were not able to keep the genetic line without becoming diluted. Others were able to keep and hold the genetic line and remain strong. Those are comments.
Thank you. Now, the thought occurred to me when the Elohim would, and it's kind of like engineer design a being in this realm. Did they engineer the DNA and the DNA would become the being they engineered? Did it work in that manner?
They would work with the DNA. The DNA would form, and depending upon the formation, the structure of the being, the DNA of the being would work together in a strong way or in a not so strong way. There are formations of DNA which give the body structure a very strong posture. We see Fibonacci series when the structures are developed with the use of the proper geometrical formations in the Fibonacci series of mathematics in the relationship and ratios between the head and the trunk of the body and the arms and the legs, then the body makes a very strong presence in ability to sustain in the light of the different pressures that are brought to bear on it. So there are formations that it was discovered that when the physical body was developed with in those relationships, it became very strong and able to survive. And so there were some selectivity within the environment, selecting those structures that were put together according to the Fibonacci mathematics that allowed those structures to survive, wherein other structures which were not of that mathematical relationships within the structure did not survive as well. So it was a co-creative experience to learn what would be more survivable.
Thank you. Excuse me for interrupting, but we have to check out from BBS. If you're on BBS, we might go for another few minutes on the call, which you can listen to on a download, or if you want to dial in now, 526-1200. The code is 1-727-46-POUND. And on that note, we will tell BBS they can disconnect you, and thank you so much. And we'll just continue for another couple of minutes here live before we end the call.